or 1-800-PROGRESSIVE.
Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Lurie. Well, we've had some computer problems this morning, so I won't be playing listener comments today, but our IT people are working on the problem. We hope to have that fixed by tomorrow. Today, recently, 300 people in South Florida were arrested on prostitution-related charges. All were arrested as a result of raids on massage parlors. The issue of who's working in massage parlors and whether they're working of their own free will or whether they're being trafficked for the purposes of performing sex acts against their will has come up. The owner of the New England Patriots was arrested at a South Florida massage parlor in February. It was a result of an anti-human trafficking operation. He was arrested along with a major Republican donor and a religious leader. The Martin County Sheriff says that some immigrants from China appeared to be living in at least some of the busted spas and massage parlors. We're joined now by two people who are familiar with sex work, and they want us to know that not all sex workers are being trafficked against their will, and that sex workers can be on the front lines of fighting human trafficking. Our guests are Jill McCracken, an associate professor of rhetoric and gender and sexual studies at the University of South Florida in St. Petersburg. She's a co-founder and co-director of the Sex Workers Outreach Program, or SWAP, Behind Bars, an organization that provides direct support for incarcerated sex workers and victims of trafficking who are in prison or jail. And also here is Amber DiPietra. She is the co-founder of the Sex Workers Outreach Project Tampa Bay. She's an intimacy coach for adults with disabilities, a performance artist, and a longtime Tampa native. And Amber and Jill, welcome to WMNF. Nice to see you.
Thanks so much, Rob.
Thank you.
We appreciate being here.
Thank you for coming by. So first of all, what is the definition of sex work? Amber, should we start with you?
Sure. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, you sound good.
Okay, great. So sex work exists on a spectrum from legal to illegal. There's all different kinds of sex workers, from an escort to a cam performer, which is also like a porn performer, to phone sex operator, strippers, all kinds of adult entertainers.
Mm-hmm. And Jill, would you add to that?
Sure. I define sex work as the exchange of some kind of sexualized intimacy for something of value. So you may be exchanging sex for money. You may exchange sex for a place to live. Many people who may be engaged in street-based sex work may not even identify as quote-unquote prostitutes or sex workers. They're just, I'm exchanging or trading for basic needs. So it's illegal and legal. The most common that we know about here, especially in the U.S., is prostitution, which is illegal outside of certain counties in Nevada.
How common is it here in the Tampa Bay area, this kind of work that you've described, both the legal and the illegal kind of work? How common would you say it is?
Oh, I'd say it's very pervasive. I mean, sex work in general, it includes pornography. It includes, like we said, webcamming, includes all kinds of stuff. So I think what ends up happening, and you talked about the Kraft case and the headlines, what ends up happening is people focus far more on sex trafficking or trafficking in the sex industry, and they don't focus as much on what's going on with adult consensual sex workers. And even more importantly and significantly, I would say, they don't focus on labor trafficking. And we know statistically that across the United States, but primarily in Florida, labor trafficking is by far more prevalent than trafficking in the sex industry.
And you're talking about people that are forced to work against their will in farm work for the most part.
Farm work, but also hospitality and restaurants, lots of different domestic workers. We see it in all kinds of areas.
So why do you think that sex trafficking gets more attention than labor trafficking?
Because, for obvious reasons, you're saying. It's salacious. And mm-hmm. I also think the idea of forcing someone, people have feelings around this sex act, right? And so I think people feel like it's particularly abhorrent to force someone to engage in a sexual interaction, as opposed to forcing someone to pick tomatoes or forcing someone to clean your house. But in all of those cases, people are being forced to use their bodies in ways that they're not choosing or not being paid if it is indeed trafficking. So,
and Amber, I take it that you take a firm stand against sex trafficking.
Definitely. All sex workers do. No one wants to see anyone forced to do something against their will. But what does happen when we look only at sex trafficking is that we're ignoring labor, people who work in the sex industry. And when you asked how prevalent is sex work in Florida, well, I'm in Tampa, you know, this town was very much known for Joe Redner's strip clubs, and Tampa is still very much known for strip clubs. And also in the porn industry, which is a multi-billion dollar global industry, Tampa's pretty big. There's Vivid Entertainment and other big porn producers here. So these are women doing legal sex, or men and women doing legal sex work who need labor protections.
Is Vivid the women-oriented porn place? Is that?
I think there
is a woman-oriented porn distributor, but I don't know if that's Vivid.
I'm not sure.
Shows how little I know about this stuff.
We'll have to research that.
Okay, all right. Well, you're listening to WMNF in Tampa. We're talking about sex work, and we're talking about human trafficking. And if you've got a question or comment, you can email us here in the studio. Our address is dj@wmnf.org. I want to ask you about the recent raids on the massage parlors in South Florida. A whole lot of news stories have come out of them. Owner of New England Patriots was arrested. One of the women who used to own one of these massage parlors apparently is politically well-connected to both the Trump administration and to China. And then there's the sheriff in Martin County who says that some of these women may have been sex trafficked. Let me start with the sex trafficking. What's your take on whether or not these arrests have exposed a giant or a sex trafficking ring in South Florida? Well, I'm just asking for your opinion now.
I would say absolutely not. No one was charged with trafficking in that case, not one person. In fact, all of those women were arrested for prostitution. They were taken out in handcuffs. They were held, and now they have to deal with the issues that are related directly with incarceration. So it has not revealed a trafficking situation.
Mm-hmm. And Amber, would you add to that?
Yeah, so if they were victims, they're just doubly victimized by this whole process of criminalization, these arrests, and all the court things they're going to have to go through.
Now, one of the eyewitnesses to one of these arrests said that the women were being held, or women were living in a room. There was a shower head at one of the ends of the room where they took showers right out in the open. And the refrigerator was stacked with food, but it didn't look like a very peaceful or relaxful living conditions for these women. And that's why I think the stories of alleged sex trafficking have arisen after these arrests.
I think that from my knowledge and what I've read, there was one person who had been crashing there, sleeping there. I don't think that they all were, which, again, if sleeping at your workplace is trafficking, then, I mean, I've been trafficked because I've slept at my workplace before, right? So I think, yes, we absolutely need to look at all of the evidence. At the underlying problem here is the fact that, in my opinion, prostitution is criminal. If prostitution were decriminalized, then the women, men, whoever, trans people that are engaging in prostitution would be able to come forward and tell police officers when exploitative conditions are arising, whatever that is. So it's the same vulnerability that happens with, let's say, farm workers. If they're undocumented people, they're vulnerable and they cannot or are afraid to come forward. And it's the same thing with massage. If these women were there against their will and they weren't afraid of getting arrested for prostitution, then they would be much more likely to come forward and talk about the exploitative conditions they may be experiencing. But not one of them did come forward and say that they were being exploited.
And a few weeks ago in Tallahassee, women from SWOP, from your organization, the Sex Worker Organizing Project, were in Tallahassee arguing that sex workers could be on the front lines of recognizing and turning in sex traffickers.
That's correct. Yes. We do. So SWOP Tampa Bay Sex Workers Outreach Project is a national organization. We have chapters all over the country. And SWOP Tampa Bay does street outreach. So we work with women who are working and living on the street. And we absolutely would be at the front end of seeing if there was exploitative issues going on, right? Now, asking that person, whoever that person is, to go forward and try to rectify the problem is next to impossible because they're afraid of getting arrested. Yeah. Plus, there's all other kinds of issues with having a criminal record and the fact that people often don't take sex workers seriously. So that's a significant problem. I would say that SWOP Behind Bars, which is an organization that I co-direct and co-founded, is we work specifically with people who have been incarcerated. And we work with people all the time in prison right now who are have trafficking convictions, and they were trafficked. So that is a huge problem, because when people have a conviction of trafficking, they go on the sex offender list, it gets really, really messy. And I can guarantee you that they were trafficked themselves.
Okay, so you're saying that these people themselves were victims of trafficking, yet they are in jail or prison on charges of sex trafficking?
That's correct.
Well, how could that be? If you're the victim, how could you also charged with committing the crime?
In some cases, you're victimized and you may be in a relationship with someone, and this is related to domestic violence, right? Where people can actually move in and out of quote-unquote trafficking situations. So one of my friends who's in prison right now was with a boyfriend, and I would say, based on the story that he was telling, or that she was telling me, that she and a friend were both being trafficked. The friend was under 18, and she took the rap for her boyfriend, and so she took the trafficking charge as well. She tried to actually take the woman once she realized she was under 18, took her home, found out that she was working on the street, and her friend said, we can't leave her out on the street, that's too dangerous. So they allowed her to work in the home, and then the boyfriend took over, pistol whipping, all kinds of problems. And do you think that she's going to go to the police and say, this is happening to me? No, she's not.
Well, go ahead, Amber. I'm sorry.
For instance, like, a few women might want to have their own erotic massage business out of their home because it seems safe to them, two or three women roommates in an apartment with a spare room to do that. But in those cases, one of these women or the leaseholder can be accused of trafficking the others. Isn't that correct?
That is absolutely correct.
Yeah.
One of the problems that we have with the legislation that's happening right now in Tallahassee, well, there's a lot of problems that we have, but one is that they want to create a registry.
Of sex workers?
Oh, no. They say no. They say the intent is for, quote-unquote, John's customers and pimps, quote-unquote, exploiters. They say that's the intent, but the way that it's written is if you are soliciting, procuring, whatever. And we brought this up in court. I brought this up in a session, right? And to solicit can mean, and to procure can mean, I can drive my friend to an out call. That's what they call it if you're going out. And I could be procuring her to engage in prostitution. So if I'm driving her, I am now considered a trafficker. My name will be on that registry.
When in fact you were keeping her safe. You know, guarding, making sure she left the appointment on time, making sure no one saw her walk away into the night anonymously. Mm-hmm. Right. So these laws really harm adult consensual sex workers because they endanger them. They disable them from all their safety protocols.
Well, we're talking about the difference between sex trafficking and sex work, and our guests are Jill McCracken, an associate professor of rhetoric and gender and sexual studies at the University of South Florida in St. Petersburg, and also here is Amber DiPietro. She's the co-founder of the Sex Workers Outreach Project Tampa Bay. She's an intimacy coach for adults with disabilities, and you're listening to WMNF in Tampa. By the way, Blanny Whalen is shooting the video of this, and we're on Facebook Live on our website, so if your friends are on my page, rather, Rob Lori on Facebook. So if you're friends with me, you can watch the video right now. And this is 88.5 FM. So, Jill, I want to go back to you. You say that the best solution to this problem is to legalize prostitution. Tell us, you know, give us the outlines of how that would work.
First of all, let me clarify that I would never say that legalizing prostitution is the answer. So there's a big difference between decriminalizing prostitution and legalizing
it. Okay, so you want to decriminalize it.
Decriminalize it. So decriminalization actually puts the power in the workers' hands versus legalization usually puts the power in the sellers or the government, right? They legislate it. And so I actually was honored to do a Fulbright in New Zealand last fall, and they are the only country in the world to have decriminalized prostitution. It's been decriminalized for 15 years. And the goal of that Fulbright project was to look at the impact of trafficking and violence in the sex industry within a decriminalized environment. And I will say wholeheartedly, it is safer, and it is sex workers have the ability, and they do go to the police and talk about exploitative conditions. So decriminalization would basically be that labor issues still apply. So if you're working three or four or five people in a quote-unquote brothel or a house, there are still issues of labor that control that. But you have access to resources so that you can go out if there is exploitative conditions happening. And you don't have a criminal record. A criminal record, trafficking comes from vulnerability. If you're an undocumented person, you're vulnerable. If you're engaged in prostitution, consensually, you're vulnerable. And so if you have a criminal record, it's that much harder to go out and get a quote-unquote regular job, because now you have that criminal record. You can't find a place to live. No one will rent to you. And then all of these just are cyclical, and they combine to then you're almost forced to continue engaging in illegal things because you cannot find a mainstream job.
In the media, it's made out to seem like the cops come and they save the trafficking victims. So even if they really are trafficking victims, they haven't been saved by anything because they have this criminal record. Perhaps they were already undocumented. They had other issues going on. This getting saved by the cops is not social work. It's not helping them with these core issues. So I just wanted to make that distinction there.
Mm-hmm. If you're convicted right now of prostitution, are you subject to the same kind of restrictions that somebody who was involved in, let's say, sexually molesting a child? I mean, for instance, if you're convicted of a sex crime, I think you have to live far away from any school. And when you come into the neighborhood, that neighborhood is told, well, this person who's convicted of this sex crime is moving into your neighborhood. Does that happen to people who are involved in sex work?
No.
Okay.
Thankfully, it actually was happening in Louisiana. Everyone who was engaged in prostitution, that had a prostitution charge, they were put on the sex offender registry. They got that repealed. And I think that's very good. It's that would compound the problems.
In New Zealand, where you were, have they seen a reduction in crime as a result of the legalization of prostitution or the decriminalization? Prostitution.
Yeah. They absolutely have, and even more importantly, there's an organization called the New Zealand Prostitutes Collective. So they are all over the country in different cities, and people will come in and talk to them about sex work and working in a brothel versus working independently versus whatever, and they can get advice. They can get free condoms, they can get sponges, but they have a resource. And NZPC, New Zealand Prostitutes Collective, they have very strong established relationships with the police. And so oftentimes what will happen is, let's say someone wasn't paid, let's say a sex worker wasn't paid, she can call or he can call NZPC and say, I wasn't paid. And they will work with the police officers to say, this is a crime, right? This is rape. This is not, you had a consensual act. So yes, I think that it by far decreases violence. Clients know that sex workers can go to the police if there's a problem. And the police are actually, it's just fascinating to me, the police are actually driving around on the streets and saying, hey, to the street workers, hey, you guys, you doing okay? Everyone okay? And they're like, yep, we're good, thanks.
Amber, what's the relationship between the police and sex workers now in the U.S. where, prostitution has not been decriminalized? Could you tell us of the people that you know that are in the sex work business, what do they think of the police?
I think it's fair to say that a lot of the time, sex workers fear the police more than they fear clients.
Why is that?
Because they're in a position of power, and power can be abused. You know, the police can extort someone, rape someone. Many, many different crimes are committed against sex workers by police officers.
And those crimes can never be reported because it's the word of the sex worker against the police officer.
Exactly.
And it rarely will the police officer be found or charged with a crime.
Exactly.
So when I see, you know, I got to say that when I drive up and down, and I do drive all over the Tampa Bay area, when I drive through Sarasota and I'm on US 41, or if I'm in West Tampa and I'm on Kennedy Boulevard, or if I'm in some other part of the community and I see Lotus Blossom Massage Parlor, and, you know, I don't go into those places, but I just assume the worst. I assume that what's behind those doors are women who are trafficked from Southeast Asia. This is, I'll tell you what my stereotype is. Women who are trafficked from Southeast Asia wanting to get a better life here in the U.S., but they get sidetracked and forced to do this kind of work until they can figure a way out. How far off do you think that stereotype is? Pretty bad?
Do you want to say something?
No, go first.
I would say that stereotype is off. I think that people migrate for all different kinds of reasons, and they may choose to engage in sex work, and they may choose to do nails, right? I don't know if you have that same stereotype when you go by
a nail shop.
Nail
no,
salon.
I don't. I'll admit
yes.
that. I don't
and
have
And there
that.
Are
yeah.
oftentimes nail salons that are primarily that primarily employ Asian people.
Mm-hmm.
And I know of cases where trafficking, labor trafficking has happened. So we don't have that same stereotype. Massages are, people give massages all over the place.
You see massage envy everywhere, all these, you
Which
know.
I assume massage envy or those kind of places are engaged in non-sexual massage.
So the stereotype becomes, you know, somewhat racist and classist and all these issues, because it has a lot to do with the way the place looks on the outside. And earlier you were quoting someone who said that it looked like the women in the Jupiter massage parlor weren't living in a very tidy or comfortable way. To me, it honestly sounds like renting a room in San Francisco or New York. You mm-hmm. live in a lot of dodgy situations when it's hard to make ends meet.
Well, we're talking about sex trafficking and sex work and the difference between the two. And if you've got a question for our guests, our phone number is 813-239-9663. You can also send your email into the studio here at dj@wmnf.org. Amber DiPietra is here. She's co-founder of the Sex Workers Outreach Project Tampa Bay. She's an intimacy coach for adults with disabilities. She's also a performance artist and a longtime Tampa native. Also here, Jill McCracken, an associate professor of rhetoric and gender and sexual studies at the University of South Florida in St. Petersburg, and co-founder and co-director of the Sex Workers Outreach Program Behind Bars, an organization that provides direct support for incarcerated sex workers and victims of trafficking who are in prison or in jail. And let's go to Craig in Sarasota, who has a question. Craig, what's your question for our guests?
Hey, Rob, good afternoon. I joined the conversation a little late, so I don't know that I have the whole picture, but I did hear one of your guests say that if this was decriminalized, this industry was decriminalized, that prostitutes would have the ability to perform massage as part of their business. Did I hear that right?
No, I don't think you did. My name's Jill, by the way. Thanks okay. for your question, Craig. I was basically saying that if prostitution were decriminalized, then if exploitation were happening in some way or another, that they would have recourse. They could go to the police and not be afraid of getting arrested. And I guess if they want to incorporate massage into their sex work, that would be their choice and perhaps would then be subjected to licensing requirements for massage.
Yeah, that's a separate
exactly.
issue.
As long as they're subjected to licensing requirements, that is something that has to be upheld in the massage industry. I've been a massage therapist for 21 years, and this is something that we've had to battle ever since I was in massage school, mm-hmm. and that is the legitimacy of the massage industry. So it's a real fine line when you're talking about an established industry that constantly has to fight the sexual connotation mm-hmm. with the kind of, you know, sort of frivolous massage that can go on anywhere. So it's really, really important that we maintain a high standard in that business. So I'm not so opposed to decriminalization, but I would certainly want those people to be fully licensed and fully educated in the industry.
Definitely. There's no doubt about that. This is Amber. I should have spoken to that because I'm also a body worker and I do sexological body work, which is legal in the state of California. And some of the folks who do that work are crossover from massage. So there's very specific licensing. You can't just do massage because you're a sex worker. You know, it's a bit of a misnomer to call these spas massage parlors.
Unless they're
right.
licensed, and the people there
yes,
are licensed
exactly.
as massage therapists, then yes.
Good. Anything to uphold the industry. So thanks for taking my call.
And I think one of the things that's great is you have labor protections, which is really good.
Yeah.
All right, Craig, thanks a lot. Thanks for your question.
Thank you.
All right. And again, our phone number is 813-239-9663. And our email address is dj@wmnf.org. Okay, so there's two bills in Tallahassee, one by Heather Fitzenhagen, House Bill 851, and then Lauren Book has Senate Bill 540. They would require police, hotel workers, and massage parlor employees to be trained to recognize signs of human trafficking. Originally, as you said, Jill, the bills would create a database of people accused of soliciting prostitution. It was taken out of the House bill last week. The database would shame consensual sex workers, and the training would likely result in recognizing all sex workers rather than trafficking victims, according to Christine Hanovan, a social worker and community organizer for your group for Sex Workers Outreach Project. She's from Orlando. But what do you think about House Bill 851 and Senate Bill 540? Jill, let's start with you.
I find it very problematic. I think one of the things that Senator Book was doing, which is laudable, is she worked with a victim of trafficking and to help create this bill. She did not work with sex workers. When we first came there and talked about the bill, she was very open to working with people that identify as adult consensual sex workers, and I appreciate that. Whereas Representative Fitzenhagen was very clear at the end of her testimony, stating she would not work with quote-unquote criminals, although she didn't put the hashtags around them. She would not work with criminals. And I find that incredibly problematic because people who are engaged in prostitution, yes, you can absolutely say they are quote-unquote criminals. And yet, we have much to learn. And if we're going to make policies around sex work, prostitution, trafficking, we need to talk to the people who are most closely connected to those issues. And that includes adult consensual sex workers. So there's a lot of problems with both of those bills. And we actually, on Swap Behind Bars, we have a website, or we have a page that talks through all of the legislation and our perspective on it. So I would encourage you all to look at that and actually talk to your representatives about how important it is to listen to sex workers and people who have been exploited and victims of trafficking.
Fitzenhagen saying that she wouldn't work with us because what we were doing is illegal. You know, right after SWAT members had gotten up to testify, she immediately went up and put air quotes around the word sex worker and said, these prostitutes are illegal. You know, I don't have to work with them. Basically, that's not a direct quote. But in essence, that's what she was saying. And it's just ridiculous because many things have been illegal. Slavery was legal. Interracial marriage was illegal. Drinking was illegal. The marijuana industry is changing the legality there. That is not a marker of, you know, an ongoing conversation about society and, you know, the changes we're trying to make.
Are there places in the U.S. where sex work, the kind of work that you've been talking about, is mostly legal? And you know, obviously, you described a range of sex work that includes adult dancers and that includes porn actresses, and that is not illegal. But the other kind of sex work, where two consenting adults exchange money for a sex act, are there any places in the country where it's legal?
Brothels in certain counties in Nevada, not Las Vegas, so don't get confused. Mm-hmm. Certain counties in Nevada allow for brothels, and so those are legislated, and it actually gives an incredible amount of power to the brothel owners. And so it's a problem. We don't need to go into all of the details unless you want to know. But yes, there are places where it is legal.
And what are the problems?
Oh, well, some of the problems that I've heard, and Barb Rentz is a researcher, and she's done a ton of work on this. Brothels are not my primary area of expertise, but some of the problems is that the girls, the women, are required to stay for 2 weeks. They can't leave. There can be a lot of competition between the women, and they can be very hurtful to each other. And most of the problems, I would say, is that, again, it puts the power in the employer's hands, and it puts the power in the legal system. And you have to be tested so often, and you have to do all of these different things, right? And if you don't do that, then you're now in the criminal realm. So there's significant problems.
Doesn't it make sense, though, to be tested? I mean, both for the health of the sex worker and also for the health
Certainly.
Of the client?
Absolutely.
But it's extreme. I think, you know, if you leave because you need to go to the store to buy something, mm-hmm. then you'll be fined or kicked out because you're not allowed to leave it all for that reason, mm-hmm. because they don't know what you're doing if you leave to go to get a personal item at the drugstore.
I mean, testing is absolutely imperative, and but I also think that because sex work is so stigmatized, it's really difficult for people to go to their healthcare provider every 6 weeks and say, I want to get tested, or however often, and they're looked at like, why are you always getting tested? Or if they happen to tell their dentist that they are a sex worker, their dentist says, well, you need to get tested. Mm-hmm. So we want to have the individual control his or her choices around getting tested and not being stigmatized because they are getting tested. One thing I do want to emphasize, which I found fascinating, in New Zealand, where it's decriminalized, using a condom for every sex act is legislated, and there is a fine of $2,000 if you don't, which means that the power is now again in the sex worker's hands. If a client says, hey, baby, I'll give you more money to not use a condom, then, okay, are you going to give me more than $2,000? Because that's illegal. And they use, for the most part, they use condoms for every sex act. So I find that that kind of legislation can be incredibly helpful.
We're going to take some, I'm going to read some of these email questions that have come in and comments, and our email address is dj@wmnf.org. Jack, I think, is trying to be funny here and writing from Palm Harbor. He says, I was in Amsterdam a few years ago visiting the red light district, and I can tell you they do not give senior citizen discounts, writes Jack. Okay, that's Jack. And then Elio writes, unless times have changed, prostitution is legal in many parts of Europe. When I was there, one could go to nightclubs specifically for that reason. Unfortunately, it did not eliminate street prostitution and the inherent problems of that, but it was legal. It was my understanding that street prostitutes were mostly illegal aliens in Europe. Even then, the police were very lax about enforcing the law in that regard. So that's Elio's email. And Amber or Jill, do you want to comment about that?
I would say that if they were quote-unquote illegal aliens, it was probably because they weren't a citizen of that country. And so depending on the country, the laws are very different. Then yes, you would be, if it was legal to work as a citizen, this is the same issue that is actually happening in New Zealand, but if it's legal to work as a citizen, then yes, you absolutely would not be able to work. And therefore, you are again vulnerable, right? You're left open. One of the things that I wanted to emphasize, and this actually directly relates to a lot of different countries in Europe, the prostitution registry that is being purported through the current legislation that we're dealing with right now, that is what's called a quote-unquote end-demand policy, meaning let's not go after the quote-unquote poor women, let's not go after the sex workers, let's go after the Johns and the pimps. The prostitution registry, the way that it is written in this legislation, does not explain that explicitly, so it leaves a lot of people at risk. But we know again and again from a lot of very evidence-based research, end-demand policies don't work. So you can criminalize the client, but what that does, it actually decreases the safety of the sex worker. And the way that I can explain that is, right now, many sex workers screen their clients. They don't want them to be policed, but they also want to be safe. Well, if I'm afraid that I'm going to get, as a client, if I'm afraid I'm going to get arrested, I'm not going to give you my real name. I'm not going to tell you who I am. And so it just conflates who's scary from who's afraid of law enforcement. And it makes it that much harder. It pushes it underground. Sorry, Amber, jump in.
No, it just makes it much more difficult for sex workers to do screening work, to get screening information from these clients, because the clients are especially at risk under this end-demand model.
Mm-hmm. Well, here's an email from Anonymous, and Anonymous writes, most women would not do any exploited sex work if they could support themselves in other ways. Making prostitution legal only continues demeaning women, writes Anonymous, and this woman says, the problem is man, the attitude that women serve for their selfish wants. Non-prostitutes looking for a place to rent or stay That has many dangers for women. Most rentals and rooms are sleazy. Men want sex and usually leave the woman running. Hidden cameras are in many places. Anyway, this is part of a long email that Anonymous sent in. But her first point, most women would not do any exploited sex work if they could support themselves in other ways. Amber, what would you say?
I think that's a rather large claim to assume to know what most women would do. Sex work has been around since biblical times. We know this from the Bible. And not just to quote, not even Joe,
yes,
but the Bible.
Not the Bible. Actually, it's been from goddess times, which is pre-Bible.
Right, exactly. Sex work has been around since the beginning of civilization. And so it's really hard to assume that we know what women would and would not do. There's a lot. I'm a sex educator, dealing with the way people feel about sexuality and their bodies and their right to have sex. And so there's a lot of assumptions in what this emailer is saying about what is decent, what is good, what is exploitative that not all women share.
I would like to say that I actually appreciate Anonymous's email because it brings up a really important point. And I would actually be happy to talk with her more one-on-one if she wants to reach out. But I think that we do consider specifically prostitution, but even dancing and pornography, oftentimes exploitative of women in particular. And what I would say is I do know many, many sex workers who absolutely choose it. I also know many, many sex workers who would not want to do it if they could find a place or a job where they could make a living wage. So when I talk to people who are talking about sex work as exploitative, I say, let's work on the underlying conditions that lead people into things that they may or may not want to be doing. So that's a big problem, right? If they could make a living wage doing something else, perhaps they would. But in and of itself, sex work is not exploitative. And actually, in many cases, I agree. I love my job. I really enjoy my job, and I wish that everyone could love their job. That's just not the way it is in America in a capitalist society. But if everyone that loves their job could feel protected and have labor protections, then things would be a lot better for everyone. It's not, and actually, charging money is not being exploited. You're actually able to have power because you now can provide for your basic needs as opposed to relying on someone else, the state, whatever.
And when you say you love your job teaching at USF.
I love my job teaching at USF, and I do research, and so mm-hmm. I do both.
Let me get a little bit deeper into that, though. How do you square your feminism, and I take it that you're a feminist, a third wave feminist? Would that be fair to say?
Sure, yes.
Okay,
yes.
All right. So how do you square your feminism with, I think over the years, lots of progressives have looked at prostitution and said it is exploitative.
Uh-huh, absolutely. I am a feminist, absolutely. And I feel like people's ability to have power over their bodies and make whatever choices they choose to make, whether it be for money or not, as long as they're adults and they're consenting, should be their business. I feel that as feminists, if we start to try to legislate morality and legislate values over other women's bodies, we're in dangerous territory. And so I really value the fact that individuals can decide. We try to make a society as strong and as supportive as possible, but individuals can make decisions about what they want to do for money. They make decisions about what they want to do, go out, have a drink, have a date, go home. We can make decisions about what we want to do, and that's not anti-feminist. That is feminist to me.
But there are some second-wave feminists who, you know, hearing you say that would, you know, throw their books. I mean, lots of books were written in the 70s against that very idea.
There were a lot of problems with second-wave feminism. I'm a disability advocate. That was my first career before I started doing any sex worker rights work. You know, and second-wave feminists were not great with women with disabilities. They really got left behind. There are some very hurtful quotes that were done in interviews about second-wave feminists not working with women with disabilities. So, you know, there's been a progression.
They didn't have an answer to everything.
No.
No, and I think that it is a step-by-step process. But what I would say to Anonymous or other people that would, you know, this issue of feminist is, in a very open and listening way, have you talked to sex workers? Have you had a conversation with sex workers? Because that, listening to sex workers is the beginning. And if sex workers say that they're feeling exploited, then yes, we need to hear that. I would say most sex workers feel exploited by the law and they feel exploited by police.
Well, both of you talk with sex workers all the time. What do you think the most surprising thing that the public would learn about talking to the women and the men that you talk to? What would be the most surprising thing that the public might learn about people that engage in sex work?
I think there's so many surprising things. You know, as a sex educator, I see every day in so many small ways what we don't understand about our own sexuality and general assumptions about sexuality in our communities and larger cultures. And so these are directly grafted onto what we believe about sex workers. So I think that people would be very surprised to learn that sex workers are some of the most educated people about how to prevent STDs. They're some of the most educated people about how to help with chronic illness that affects one's sexuality, like prostate cancer, trauma from giving birth. And that sex workers really do enjoy their work some of the time, and other times they don't. It's not a simple story. Mm-hmm. You know, what would you add to that?
I agree. I think that one of the things that most people would maybe be surprised by, except for the clients out there, is that clients are good people. I'm not saying that men should have these sexual urges and we just need to let everything go so they can have their urges. But the majority of clients are not abusive. They respect and they understand that they're in getting into an agreement with someone for a given amount of time. I also agree. I'm sitting here. I love my job. I was in a faculty meeting yesterday. I wasn't loving my job. So there's lots of times. Right. Sorry, faculty. There's lots of times when we don't love our jobs. And that's just a part of life and living in a capitalistic society.
And I want to add that, you know, clients can be women. It's also very important. I'm very invested in the work of access to sex work for clients with disabilities. Mm-hmm. As a disability advocate and educator, there's a wonderful organization in Australia called Touching Base, and they do amazing work with making the brothels there accessible to adults with disabilities.
Mm-hmm. So. I would also say that it's not surprising, but sex workers are incredibly compassionate people and incredibly personable and have amazing social skills, that they work with people one-on-one, all kinds of different people. I respect them a lot.
Well, we've been talking about the difference between sex trafficking and consensual sex work, and our guests are Jill McCracken, an associate professor of rhetoric and gender and sexual studies at the University of South Florida in St. Pete, and co-founder, co-director of the Sex Workers Outreach Program Behind Bars, an organization that provides direct support for incarcerated sex workers and victims of trafficking who are in prison or jail. And also with us, Amber DiPietra. She is the co-founder of the Sex Workers Outreach Project Tampa Bay. She's an intimacy coach for adults with disabilities, a performance artist, and a longtime Tampa native. And our phone number is 813-239-9663. And this is WMNF in Tampa. We're also on my Facebook page. We're Facebooking this live so you can see the video. Let's go to Sasha, who's in Pasco County. Sasha, you're on with our guests. So what's your question?
Hi. Thanks to hear you, Rob. Appreciate it. I'm over here in Pasco County, Florida. And I have a question or two. And my first question is, when you're listening to the women or men, or, well, you predominantly work with women that have been exploited and trafficked, do you often hear that some women, when they have gone for help to treat their addictions, that they actually, in the places that they seek refuge at, for example, in random halfway houses and such, that they actually, if they have been disenfranchised due to their addiction, that they have been exploited and trafficked out, and also that the same systems, both judicially and legally, also support this extremely tragic exploitation And I was just wondering if you can concur with me that you have heard such stories, particularly women that have had their children removed as a result of having maybe a case plan and are more vulnerable, and that has been also used as a tool to further their exploitation. So I was wondering if you can concur any stories with that. And also, my second question is, where brothels are legal, has there been any talk of unionization?
Great. Great questions.
All right, Sasha. Thanks for the questions.
Sasha, for your first question, which you can correct me if I'm not getting it right, is I would say that absolutely halfway houses, and not all of them, of course, but many people can be exploited out of them. I think the issue of addiction and substance use is really challenging. I advocate for a harm reduction approach, which is basically to have the person centered at the situation or the equation. So if you're in a situation where you, again, are vulnerable, which if you're addicted to substances, you're vulnerable, that can then lead you to be exploited. So I don't know if I'm answering your question fully, but I would concur with you that our legal system as well, many people will say that our legal system traffics people, forces them to go out and engage in sex work because their criminal record is such that they cannot get a regular job and they cannot get a place to live. Did I answer your question?
Yeah, but have you also heard that people that are involved in the judicial system, for example, people involved in the judicial system also in high positions are also involved in human trafficking, sexual human trafficking?
I don't think that I'm assuming you mean like judges and people like that. I don't know of those specifics in this area. I would say that absolutely police officers abuse their power again and again, and that is incredibly problematic, and it is trafficking.
Okay. Well, Pasco County, I guess, is a county unto itself, more than likely, because we have a very serious epidemic of human trafficking in Pasco County, which is a poorer county in the state of Florida, and there's a very, very high rate of substance abuse, and a lot of women here are trafficked, and as far as exposing this, it's so entrenched judicially and legally and systemically that I would not, know where anyone would begin to even address this.
I will say that, this is Amber speaking, Sasha. I do a lot of research on addiction and harm reduction, and was listening to a public radio story, and I cannot remember where I heard it, but maybe you could contact the show afterwards and I could provide that information. And it was about corruption in the rehab industry, and it was centered in Florida, in which some of these halfway houses were exploiting women, were trafficking women, basically. So that is the one thing I can think of most recently that has really alluded to anything like what you're saying.
Okay, thank you.
All right, Sasha, thanks a lot. If somebody like Sasha has a problem and they feel like local law enforcement isn't dealing with this, can they go to your organization, Sex Workers Organizing Project?
Absolutely. We have a 800, well, it's 877. It's a warm line hotline. I think it's answered pretty much 24/7.
Mm-hmm. We also have a local number.
Oh, we have a local number.
Now or at the end of the show?
Well, how about giving it now? And the 877 number is the warm national number.
Yes. 877. And if you go to SWAP behind bars, SWOP behind bars.org, it's right there at the top of the page. I should probably memorize it, but I don't have it.
This is our local number. I don't have my glasses on. You want to read them that number?
Yep. Our local number is 813-279-9...
Nope. It's at the very top.
Oh, I'm sorry.
You're looking at the... Yeah.
Our local number is 727-308-3608. 727-308-3608.
And that would be the local contact for the Sex Worker Organizing Project that helps women who are incarcerated, especially, or sex trafficked?
Right. Well, so SWAP Tampa, which is the local number that I just read you, we work directly with people who are sex workers in our local community. SWAP Behind Bars works with people who are incarcerated. But I will say that we get calls all the time from sex workers, and we also get calls from clients, and we get calls actually forwarded to us from the Polaris Project, of all things. We're actually working right now on a statistical analysis of the number of calls.
What's the Polaris Project?
Oh, the Polaris Project is the national anti-trafficking organization. It's the hotline where most people, if you think trafficking is happening, then you should call them. I don't know their number. But they will refer people to us because they don't know how to deal with the situation. And so we will work with people who have more challenges. So I would absolutely encourage people to reach out and take a look at our website, both SWAP Tampa and SWAP Behind Bars.
All right. And Sasha had also asked about unionization.
Right.
Are there any unions for sex workers?
I know that there was a really brilliant example, the Lusty Lady.
The Lusty Lady. So unionization has been talked about more in terms of strip clubs. I think Sasha originally asked about brothels in Nevada. I'm not sure about that. But the Lusty Lady is a very famous feminist peep show strip club in San Francisco that was open until the early 2000s, from the 70s until the early 2000s. That famously the workers went on strike and unionized. There's a great documentary about it that I cannot remember.
Real Life New Girl. But yeah, so there's that. I would say that it's less of unionized in terms of, I don't think there's any unions at all in Nevada. I would say that in New Zealand, it's less of unionized and more just of being able to organize together so that they could say, we're not going to take this treatment anymore, whatever that is. And I feel like that's one of the biggest problems with U.S. legislation right now, is that even communicating about your work, talking about, quote unquote, bad Johns, talking about how to keep yourself safe, all of that is criminalized and considered to be trafficking. And that is a significant problem because sex workers can't keep themselves safe.
Let's go to John in St. Pete. John, you're on with our guests. What's your question?
My question is have you ever had any men trafficked?
Oh, yes.
Men trafficked.
Yes, absolutely. There's an organization that's really excellent in Fort Lauderdale, led by Nathan Earle, and it's called Arc of Freedom Foundation, and they work primarily with boys, men, and trans individuals. But absolutely, and that's one of the problems, is people don't see it as an issue that affects men, and it absolutely does affect men.
All right.
I'm curious if men were involved in this, and except, you know, being the Johns.
Yes, they are. They can be. Unfortunately, yes, they are. They can be exploited, and there's even fewer organizations that work specifically with men and trans individuals, so that's a problem.
All right, John, thanks a lot. And let's go to Tony in Tampa. Tony, we have 30 seconds. What would you like to ask our guests?
Well, I mean, not too many questions, more than I, you know, philosophy. I'm kind of like anonymous on it. I, quite frankly, any, you know, I feel bad for, you know, even though there are women that do it, you know, oh, yeah, I'm proud of my workmanship and all that good stuff, great. The fact of the matter is, I believe if there was a button there that says you can make $45,000 a year working 40 hours a week, you want to do this or be a prostitute, almost nobody would not pound that button. It's hard for me to fathom. Based on all the women and the stories you hear about women and bad relationships, bad marriages, you know, husbands wanting them to have sex or boyfriends forcing them to have sex, from the women I know, I don't know any of them that would do this if they had another option.
All right, Tony, thanks. Thanks for your comment.
Yeah. I wish that button existed for a lot of people. It's unfortunate that it doesn't.
Well, women are still paid 70 cents, is it right?
On every 77, but
77 cents on every dollar. They're still underpaid compared to men.
I think sex work is one of the only industries. Wasn't that a statistic that came out where they're paid higher than men consistently?
I don't know that.
Yeah.
Well, we're out of time. Jill McCracken, thank you very much for coming by. Associate Professor of Rhetoric and Gender and Sexual Studies at USF. And also here, Amber DiPietra, co-founder of the Sex Workers Outreach Project Tampa Bay. And both of you can be contacted through SWAP.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes.
So if you go to Sex Workers Outreach Project Tampa Bay, you'll be able to find our guests Amber and Jill, thank you very much for coming by.
Thank you so much for having us. It was really a pleasure.
Great to have you here. Well, if you want to comment about today's show, please call us up at 813-238-8001. Record your comment on extension 115, and I'll play your comments back tomorrow at 11 o'clock. Thanks to Jan Simpson for being our phone producer today, and Blanny Whalen put the video up on my Facebook page. Blanny, thank you very much. Stay tuned. Coming up next, your hero, Mark Biro. You're listening to 88.5 FM. This is WMNF, Tampa, St. Petersburg. And your hero, Mark Biro, will be here in 5 minutes right after the NPR News, which is coming up next here on WMNF, Tampa.